Good afternoon. I'd like to call this meeting of the Senate Transportation Committee to order. The time is 1:35 p.m. We're in Butchovich, room 205 in our nation's most beautiful capital city of Juneau, Alaska. Today is Tuesday, February 24th, 2026. Members present today are Senator Stedman, Senator Keel, Senator Rauscher, and myself, Senator Bjorkman. Senator Tobin is excused. For the record, we have a quorum to conduct business. Welcome everyone to Senate Transportation. Please join with me in silencing your cell phones and extending a warm Senate Transportation welcome to our recording secretary, Heather Ramseth, and our LEO moderator, Susan Quigley. Today, we will hear a presentation on CDL integrity from the Alaska Trucking Association. Here today, we have Randy Eifert and Mr. Joey Crum. Gentlemen, welcome to Senate Transportation. Please state your names and affiliations for the record and begin your presentation.
For the record, my name is Randy Eifert. I am the VP of Strategic Relations and Labor Affairs at Weaver Brothers Trucking in Anchorage, Alaska. We have terminals in Kenai and in Fairbanks also.
Good afternoon. I'm Joey Crum. I'm the President and CEO of Northern Industrial Training. And just thank you for the opportunity. This body has removed many barriers over the last 3 years into entry into the workforce of the industry we serve. And this presentation is meant to give confidence to the moves you've already done and provide a thanks for allowing more of our Alaskan peoples to enter our industry. So I'm here talking about CDL integrity with my colleague, Randy, who's an incredible industry partner. When we go through this slide, he'll be able to add some commentary from the employer's side. So why does this conversation matter? This conversation matters because when somebody is issued a commercial driver's license, it is a professional license. And when you have a professional license, there is an inherent contract that that holder holds with the general public and their colleague around the world. One is that a professional license holder is safe. We have a duty to keep the road users, whether they be a form of transportation that is similar to ours or others, safe. A skilled and trained professional driver protects infrastructure, and in a state where we have such acute needs for infrastructure maintenance, that is vitally important. And then it does help us with interstate commerce. Alaska produces very little. Most of the goods that we consume come from around the world and through the lower 48, and it requires a truck at some point on that journey to get to where it needs to go. So when we put this conversation in the bigger context of we are one of 50, while all of us will agree that we're the most important of the 50, we are one of 50. And what is happening nationwide and around some of our neighboring states is quite concerning to us. We have seen fraudulent CDLs granted, and those fraudulent CDL holders have caused mass casualty events where people will not only loss of life, but serious injuries. And they have shut down vital arteries for commerce across the nation. Well, that was done because there was minimal oversight, both at the state and the federal level. And that minimal oversight allowed for fraudulent documentation to be produced without verification. And it allowed inconsistent standards from the training to the license issuance to the hiring company. And that has an effect on our Alaska carriers.
Yeah, for sure. Thanks, Joey. The long-lasting effect of this for that the other states aren't following is it increases our insurance plans. Those rates go up. And quite honestly, the more importantly is the public opinion diminishes. That affects our retention and recruitment, and you're looking at a lot of lawsuit abuse and things like that. It opens the door up a lot quicker.
Thanks, Randy. One thing to remember as each of you start talking, if you could just say your name when you start talking, that'll help our records keeper and kind of the transcript it'll be easier to follow. So thank you. Senator Rauscher has a question.
Yeah, thank you, through the chair. So you've named this as a fraudulent CDLs. So how prevalent is that nowadays, if at all? And so I'm just wondering how big of a bite that is into what we do and what we're trying to eliminate.
Through the chair, this is Joey Crum. Nationwide, we have a training providers registry called the TPR that is maintained by the Federal Motor Safety Carriers Administration. On that list, there are a total of about 32,000 providers. In 2025 alone, the FMCSA removed almost 6,900 schools or training providers. They've also, and this is being fought in the court right now, invalidated, depending on what publication you are reading, up to 55 to 65,000 CDLs nationwide. So it is extremely prevalent in specific regions of the United States, typically, frankly, the West Coast.
Well, thank you. I appreciate it.
Thank you. Senator Stedman.
Yeah, just can you help me define what's a fraudulent CDL? How do they get them? And you're talking about it being prevalent. We've seen on the news some drivers that can't speak English and can't read road signs having a CDL, and they've had some incidents, casualty incidents, one in Florida and then a couple other ones in the last few months. But can you help us with what's going on the West Coast and in particular in Alaska?
Through the chair, again, for the record, this is Joey Crum. There are a set of federal standards that must be met in order for not only the examiner to administer a CDL exam, but the person that holds that is taking a test. One of them is, in fact, that they can speak English at a conversational level, because the road exam that has taken place is all done in English. The written exams are provided in English. So when we have the specific instances that were referenced by Senator Stedman, those individuals were given CDLs by states that, according to the federal government, just did not enforce any of the rules. And instead, there was no verification of document, whether or not they were even domiciled here to eligible or met some of the minimum requirements. So it is typically a state issue, but you are seeing some locations where it is more regional. In Alaska, I am happy to say that that is not a prevalent problem.
Senator Keel.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I appreciate this, because a little basic understanding is helpful to people like me who aren't in the industry. So if I'm understanding right, then there's two necessary parts. There's training that meets the standards, and then there's the tests, written test, road test. So I'm hearing that the training didn't meet the standards. Are we talking about folks who got CDLs despite not passing the tests as well, or were they just not eligible to get into the testing in the first place?
Through the chair, again, for the record, this is Joey Crum. I would contend that there's three steps. There is not only the training that must be required in order to take the test, there is the road exam, and then the third step is an issuance from a state organization to get the CDL. And in some of the cases that are going on, I don't have specific knowledge, but reading the court documents and the articles, it looks like in some places there were failures in all three phases.
Thank you. Please continue.
All right. Oh, that's a great segue, because we have these rules in place, and this is one of the times where we don't necessarily need more rules nationwide to achieve compliance and public safety and honor that contract that we made the general driving public. But instead, what we've found is just a total lack of oversight by the organizations that were charged with it. This slide reflects some of the providers that were listed on the training providers registry that said they operated in Alaska but were removed. Now, this slide does not mean to indicate that they have done anything fraudulently. It just means that they were on the list. Most of them didn't even offer the training and yet were removed for that.
Senator Rauscher.
Thank you. So, through the chair, I was just wondering now, the reasoning behind it, have we gotten to that yet? Why do they exist? The fraudulent part. I'm assuming now you can hire them for probably $5 or $10 an hour. Your business doesn't have to cough up as much money for a driver, for insurance. Am I close to it, or what are the reasons?
Through the chair, for the record, this is Joey Crum. I'm cognizant to not try to opine too much, Senator Rauscher. Mm-hmm. There have been articles written on why this was done. Certainly, it is a workforce that, when you don't meet the standards, can be paid less than, say, my employer partner at the table. And a lot of those instances where the mass casualty events had, they were owner-operators, meaning that they owned their truck and they were on contract to a bigger. So if I may, I would ask, could I follow up with you?
Sure.
With some specific examples so that I don't add my opinion to what could be considered fact.
Sure, I appreciate it. Thank you.
Yeah, no problem.
Okay.
That's totally fine. All opinions are welcome here.
So the good news is that Alaska has taken a different approach, and we have taken a different approach to CDL issuance here in this state from inception, from 1992 when the CDL first became a required license to drive. And that oversight has, in my opinion, and I do believe our employers that operate in multiple states, produced a better product from the start because of that. In order to offer CDL training or CDL examiner training, or CDL training or CDL examinations, you have to have contractual authorization from multiple state agencies. Those state agencies include things like Department of Motor Vehicles, the Alaska Commission on Post-Secondary Education, the Department of Labor, and you must remain compliant with the Department of Transportation's enforcement arm. And then there is a hands-on approach to the compliance with ongoing oversight. It's very positive to be able to say that as a company that has operated in more of the states than just Alaska, Alaska's system is robust. So when we talk about opening a CDL school, what it entails is you have to actually meet procurement standards to be able to sign the contracts. Those procurement standards, both for the DMV and the Commission on Post-Secondary Education, require that you have the financial viability to operate the business, you are bonded and insured at a correct level, that you have teach-out plans and different consumer protections in place. You have to enter informal partnership agreements with the DMV, and we'll talk about some of the requirements that that entails in a slide or two. And then, ongoing, you have to work with the DMV's compliance team at a minimum on an annual basis. More frequently, it's done quarterly. So when we talk about the operational and compliance requirements, when you have divisions like the Department of Labor and the Commission on Post-Secondary involved and the Department of Motor Vehicles, you have facilities that are inspected to make sure that if you are delivering theory or classroom instruction, they meet basic safety and educational purposes with things like proper restrooms and access, that the vehicles that you are conducting the training in actually meet the standards to be defined as a commercial motor vehicle or require a commercial driver's license. The documented routes has to do with if you are going to offer CDL exams, you have to have routes that are submitted to the DMV, and they have to be approved. Because during those routes, there are functions that must be performed. And we are talking about some left turns, right turns, start stops, navigating traffic, rural pathways, lane changes, those kind of, and that's why they have to approve the routes. Now, before an organization can actually conduct a CDL road exam, you have to submit the route you're going to use 48 hours in advance so that the DMV has an opportunity to either covert or overt audit you, i.e. follow you. There are examiner standards that are required. You have to meet a certain threshold for experience, and that experience has to be recent, and then you have to pass examiner training through the CDL, conduct supervised CDL exams, and then you have to submit instructor qualifications that they approve that you meet these, which includes yearly background checks and 40 hours of continuing education. And then the record keeping and reporting is absolutely critical, because that's the first line of how you get down the path that other states are.
Senator Rauscher.
Thank you. Through the chair. So all of this is federally regulated, so all states are in line with each other and how this works, or is this how can we I guess I'm trying to understand the makeup of 50 different states trying to produce truck drivers and CDL operators, and then I guess the last question is the UMV, are they involved whatsoever in any of this process, and if so, how, and if not, that's fine.
Through the chair, for the record, this is Joey Crum. The CDL is a federal license, so there are federal minimums that you must meet. In addition to those federal minimums, the state of Alaska has taken the approach that they are going to be heavily involved in regulating who, meaning their business partners or non-DMV staff, can train for a CDL, test for a CDL, and in some instances issue it. So there are non-DMV business partners that can issue CDLs. My company would be considered a business partner, and we can train and test CDLs, but we cannot issue them. And it is within the federal minimum standards, Alaska has made sure that the system is robust so that we catch the fraud on the way. So they have not changed the federal requirements to get a CDL, but they are helping to manage a higher standard of instructor and training provider, if that answered your question.
It does. Thank you very much.
Please continue.
So this really is a partnership between the state and the federal government. And we did see several years where on the federal level, we had a lack of oversight, meaning they just frankly did not perform their duties. And this is why it's so important that we have a strong agency at the state level to help ensure that all of those commitments that I talked about prior are met. There is an annual review when the FMCSA does it, and they do share that information with the DMV. There's ongoing program evaluation and continuous improvement. Now, the state of Alaska's DMV has welcomed the federal partnership in helping to regulate this, but they, on their own, regulate their side of the house as well. And it's important because this slide references the number of CDLs in 2025 that were issued. And just for clarity's sake, that's 4,914 Class A. So when we talk about a CDL, there are three classes, a Class A, a Class B, and a Class C. A Class C, think about the pickups at the airport. that haul a certain amount of fuel that it requires placards, meaning that it is hazardous materials. Okay, well, that makes that a commercial motor vehicle that requires a Class C CDL for that vehicle. When you get to the Class B or the Class A, it is defined as a gross vehicle weight rating, meaning how much the vehicle is designed to haul, of 26,001 pounds or greater. So for easy visual sake, a Class B vehicle will be just a truck, bunny truck, or a fuel truck with no trailer. And a Class A is a power unit with a trailer that it is towing or licensed to or hooked to. And so in the state of Alaska in 2025, there were 4,900 CDL Class A's earned. And there were 1,622 Class B's earned and 103 Class C's earned. Now, I would ask my colleague to comment, because the reason this is important is the CDL is a federal license, but basically signifies that you've met the minimum standards. It is a minimum standard to now you are allowed to enter this industry. And Randy, could you talk more about the industry?
Yeah, through the chair, this is Randy Eford. There's a lot of training that the CDL schools will do, but not all CDL holders will do flatbeds or bulkers or hot oil or learn to do long combination vehicles or sets, doubles, that we have to train as an employer side. We have the responsibility of saying, hey, if you're going to haul these things, this is how much we're going to put into you. And we put a ton of time into our training program on top of hiring CDL holders straight out of a CDL school. They know how to drive a truck down the road, but they don't know a whole lot more than that.
Okay. For the record, this is Joey Kerman. The other figure on this represents CLPs, which are defined as commercial learner's permits. These are basically like a driver's permit that you have to get before you get a driver's license. You have to get a commercial learner's permit before you can get a commercial driver's license.
Senator Stedman.
Yeah, on the earlier side of the chart, I'm just wondering how many CDLs are in the state, and then we have a possible major construction program coming with a gas line. They're talking about 8,000 employees. So are you going to cover any of that in this presentation? Two questions, I guess.
Through the chair, for the record, this is Joey Crum. The DMV does maintain a list of the number of CDL holders that are in the state of Alaska. I will get you that information. I do not have it included in this presentation. And with the upcoming projects, we have not included that in here, other than to say that, yes, we will require many more CDL holders than currently reside in the state.
Senator Keel has a question.
Thank you. So, Mr. Chairman, so Mr. Eford, it sounds like what you were talking about in terms of employer training is how a driver would get the various endorsements, the hazmat endorsement, the double, or is that something that also is trained through these FMCSA schools?
Yeah, through the chair, this is Randy Eford. Possibly both, right? The schools have the ability to train those. Certainly, they should if they're getting a hazmat endorsement or others. But with a doubles endorsement, you need not with the endorsement, but to get an LCV, you need at least a year experience prior to getting that LCV, long combination vehicle. So you have to have that in the state of Alaska to haul legally. Even though if you have a doubles endorsement on your license, that doesn't mean you're legally able to do it unless you have a LCV. Hope that answers the question.
Thank you.
Very good. I have a basic question I'm wondering about. Should it be the case as a matter of policy for the state of Alaska that the CDL schools that exist, should they expect a higher standard of their students before they finish their program? Should there be more skills that someone be required to learn? Should there be more hours? Should there be different testing so that we can close this gap between what students know when they leave a CDL school and when they are able to be a fully functional CDL driver as employed by your company or others?
Through the chair, this is Randy Averitt. I don't want to throw Joey under the bus or anything, so I will say this with caution, but I don't fully expect a CDL school to teach them everything that we do. We move all different kinds of freight through the state of Alaska, and there's no way a school is going to be able to teach that, nor would I want them to, because I would like them to, we call it the Weaver way. We want them to be trained exactly how we want things to be done. Now, there is some time that I think there might be needed, maybe a standard on the time. Now, as I understand, Joey, I don't want to misspeak here. To get your CDL, you have to have entry-level driver training, ELDT. That's a practical book side of thing, book learning, and then there's your driving skills. But there's no minimum on the time of driving skills.
Understood. Yeah. No, my goal here is if we have an effectively trained CDL driver driving that bus, you wouldn't run Joey over. Mm-hmm. So my question is, do you think the state could benefit from having a higher standard as students graduate from a CDL school like yours? Should that be something that we'd be looking at, or are we kind of about right where we are to build basic skills so then an employer can build on those how they would like after a student leaves a driving school?
Chair, for the record, my name is Joey Crum. That is a nuanced question, and it is a valuable one for discussion. There is a minimum standard, and the minimum standard was designed theoretically to get into the workforce. We used to have our requirements as far as schools had to offer a certain program that required a program that was approved by a professional truck driving institute that no longer exists. So when the federal government did the entry-level driver training standards, they kind of standardized that. So while I agree that there is always a benefit to additional training and additional professional development, there is also the argument to be said that when we look at Alaskan companies, we have very few specialized carriers, meaning very few that do only one thing. And that is for economic survival, and the other part of it is that actually provides an opportunity to get people in that meet just the minimum and give them time and experience on maybe less dangerous vehicles or less hazardous routes as they gain the experience to go forward. So to answer your question, compared to other states, we are doing really well.
Thank you. Mr. Eford.
Through the chair, or to the chair, this is Randy Eford. Joey's exactly right when it says you got the bare minimum, right? And I think in our state, the bare minimum is good enough to an extent. We put a lot of, for example, Weaver Brothers, we put a lot of effort into our training program, and you have 4 to 6 weeks of somebody in the truck with one of our trainers that are driving around our yards in the city, getting additional training on driving the truck down the road, doing different types of hauling, whether it's securing a flatbed, whether it's loading a bulker, whether it's dropping fuel. We'll do all of those additional trainings, and then we'll do spot checks on them through camera audits, and trainers will go into there. So there's a responsibility on the employer to also do their due diligence.
Thank you. For the record, this is Joey Crum.
One moment. Senator Rushrod's question.
Oh, yeah. Thank you. So what does it cost the average, student or person that wants to attain a CDL? What's the cost going to be by the time he decides to go for it to the time he has one in his hand? Through the chair. Thank you.
Through the chair, this is, for the record, is Joe Ikram. Doing a recent kind of market survey on the costs for the training providers that are located in the state, and there are several. You do have some specialized programs that are designed for people that are upgrading from a Class B, the standard vehicle, to a Class A, which is a tractor or a truck and a trailer. And then you have the other. So for the purposes of this question, I would like to frame it as I'm going to answer as typically a new person entering the industry looking for a Class A CDL. And that program, depending on the length and the region in which it's taken, can range anywhere from typically $7,000 to $12,000 to $13,000. And there are variations within that. You know, usually the longer the course, the more expensive it is, the more focused it is on additional trainings, meaning stuff that goes above and beyond the federal minimums, the more. Did that answer your question, Senator?
Almost, through the chair. So could you give us an example of the need for extra training? Why would you want to, for what level are you trying to attain to get the extra training? What will you be... Is it hazardous, or I guess I'm trying, if you know what I'm saying.
Through the chair, for the record, Joey Crumman, I appreciate that. Sometimes I speak in technical terms, and I have a pretty good knowledge base in this side, so thank you for that. The federal standards for a CDL require you to be able to do a proper pre-trip of your vehicle, i.e. safety inspection, both visual and some functions with the motor running, and then backing skills and then driving skills. But for example, with the Federal Motor Safety Carrier, it does not require on the test that you can couple or uncouple to a trailer, so that you can take a truck and hook it to a trailer. It does not require that you know how to put on snow or ice chains, or that you know how to do proper cargo securement on demonstrate proper cargo securement on a flatbed or in a van. There are theory parts that cover most of what I just talked about. But when I'm talking about the additional training, it is the stuff that goes beyond that so that they can function as, for example, an Alaska driver.
Okay. Thank you. Appreciate it.
Please continue.
Hey, continuing on to this slide to further define the TPR, which is the training providers list, what this federal website does. Now, if I want to be listed on the TPR or the training providers list, I can get on there and I can fill out the online application and I can self-attest that I meet the standards that are required there, and I'm listed on the TPR. At some point in time, the Federal Motor Safety Carrier Association will come and audit to make sure that my self-attestation is correct and true, but it does not occur prior to me having the name on the list. So what the TPRs do not do, and what is Alaska's added layer, is the TPR does not require that you provide documentation that shows you are legal within your state, with your varying state agencies. And that is what our CDL does. So you can go to the training providers list right now, and you can type in Alaska, and you can pull up people that are listed as CDL trainers/examiners on the TPR right now. But you can also then go to the issued DMV list and those people aren't listed there. And that's because from the state side, they haven't done it. The good news is, because we have state engagement and oversight in this process, you can't go to the DMV or one of their very few approved business partners to get a CDL license unless everything is correct all the way to.
Senator Rauscher.
So thank you, through the chair. So coming up from the lower 48 with a load to the state, are those requirements going to, with, I guess, cancel a personnel from making that trip, or is that's fine once they come up, but they didn't have, but they're just driving through, dropping a load off, coming back, and they're not really hired locally to, I guess you understand what I'm trying to say.
Through the chair, for the record, Joy Carm, I do think I understand the question. And the federal CDL is a license that is given reciprocity in all 50 states. So if you have one issued from a state in the lower 48, it is valid in Alaska, especially if you're driving through. We'll have domicile requirements that if you're here for a longer period of time, you have to convert to an Alaska CDL. But a CDL is a CDL.
To follow up, so then the risk part of that, I'm trying to understand, a person coming up from lower 48, traveling low off, he's not, the risk line list doesn't apply to him.
Through the chair, that CDL signifies that they've met the federal minimum requirements somewhere. So if if you talk to some of the specific trucking groups in the regions, there are, the lower 48 has snow, it has ice, it has mountains. Driving through Canada has all of those as well. So there are some that can come here and function fine. When you talk specifically, and this is now Joey Crum representing NIT and not ATA, when you go to places like the Dalton Highway, there are very few driving experiences that provide a opportunity for you to be Dalton Highway ready, if that makes sense. Yeah. You can build upon the skills that help you make it through there, but that road in general, with some of the hazards in there that is there. So that just means to say that just like if we went to a different climate and a different road, we should probably follow somebody to gain those skills. But as far as the risk exposure on having a CDL, the CDL is a federal minimum, and then the company on their insurance side would be assuming any additional risk if there is any.
All right. Well, thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Through the chair, this is Randy. Just to tack on a little bit on that is you got as an employer, we have to do a road test before employing any CDL holder. So there is a little bit of catch safe on that also.
Appreciate that. Thank you very much.
So there are a lot of things that if we could get other states to look at Alaska for, we could really export some good ideas. Some practical applications that include mandatory state authorization in order to train and or test in a CDL, that you have active compliance engagement that is not only initial to setup, initial to trainer certification, that covers auditing of the CDL road exam and ongoing training, and then basically transparent industry partnerships. Now, the FMCSA is a federal agency, and being an Alaskan testifying in front of an Alaskan committee, we can all agree that the federal government makes lots of mistakes. And so this is one of the things that having a state-involved partnership with our regulatory agencies really plays out to the benefit of Alaska. So the bottom line is the CDL system in Alaska is intentionally designed, it is audited and enforced, and we have a proven track record of the professionalism that our drivers exhibit on the road. So integrity is not accidental. It is designed, implemented, and protected through consistent effort and unwavering support. So I thank you for the opportunity to testify here, and both Randy and I are available if you have any additional questions.
Thank you very much. We appreciate your presentation today. Are there any questions from committee members? Senator Keel.
Well, thanks, Mr. Chairman. Thank you both for the presentation. I guess the question would be, how are we doing now with the capacity to train drivers and the industry's need for drivers? Are we needing to import a bunch of folks? Do we have enough slots? How's that balance?
Through the chair, this is Randy Eford. As an employer, we're looking a lot better than we have 5 years ago. But with the projects that are coming up, we know that in this industry, we're not going to be able to handle it all ourselves, right? So we will need some kind of help with it.
And through the chair, if I could add on to this, is Joey Crum. So the trucking industry in Alaska, federal rule says that in order to participate in interstate commerce, you have to be 21 years of age. Alaska makes very few items, which basically means that because you can get in a CDL at 18, there are very limited number of jobs in trucking you can get until you are 21. So we have a little bit of a barrier right there. As far as training capacity specifically goes, recently surveying results from surveying CDL schools about their capacity, none indicate that they are at full capacity at the moment. So there is some room for capacity there. In addition, the lower 48 is experiencing a freight recession. So there are more qualified drivers in the lower 48 that Alaska has an opportunity to hire if needed. And then if one of these projects that on the horizon do go, the honest answer is we don't have enough people here to do them all. So we're going to need to import them all. But our capacity, we do have room and capacity.
Thank you.
Senator Rauscher has a question.
Thank you again, through the chair. So two things. When you're a pilot, after a certain age, you can't be a pilot. If you can't pass your physical, you can't be a pilot. Do those affect truck drivers, and if so, how?
Through the chair, this is Joey Kerm. Yes, to actually have a valid CDL, you have to have a DOT physical. Mm-hmm. And that physical is good for a maximum of 2 years. Mm-hmm. And it can be for shorter periods, depending upon the health conditions and the provider, you know, their judgment there. So that, for example, my DOT, I need a new one, and I just got a letter from the Department of Motor Vehicles saying, hey, you have 6 months to get a new DOT physical, or we are going to revoke your CDL. So that does affect it. And in addition, the DOT physical and for companies to have a driver qualification file does require a 5-panel drug test that currently tests for marijuana.
And a quick follow-up. And so I just wanted to say that when I said after a certain age, I was talking about commercial. I wasn't talking about, I think it could be any age just to have a pilot's license.
Any further questions from committee members? Well, thank you again both for this presentation on CDLs and how our state compares to other states, as well as how we kind of compare to ourselves quality-wise and what we're putting on the road there to share the road with Alaskans. Here at the Senate Transportation Committee, we are always interested in what truckers see on the roadway and where our roads need improvement as far as maintenance, both structurally and snow and ice. So we always appreciate hearing from your members about how we're doing on that so that we can kind of flag those issues for DOT and let folks know what issues need to be dealt with. That feedback goes a long way to getting resources where they need to be out on the roads. And so one instance of that specifically in my district has been the Sterling Highway and talking about bridge transitions and talking about the vital maintenance north of there on the Seward Highway between the Seward Y and Anchorage and how that is a vital artery. And I know there are many, many others like it in the state and represent or in Senator Rauscher's district and Senator Keel's as well. So thank you all for that continued input. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. Well, the Senate Transportation Committee will meet again on Thursday of this week when we will hear two bills, Senate Bill 239, Motor Vehicle Registration, and House Bill 26, Statewide Public and Community Transit Plan. As there is no further business to come before the Senate Transportation Committee today, we are adjourned at 2:21 p.m.